What if the real scandal in politics isn't corruption or broken promises, but something far more insidious? When Anne Milton won her parliamentary seat, her best friend's reaction wasn't congratulations, but horror. What have you done? Oh my God, what the fuck have you done? This visceral response captures something we all sense, but rarely articulate. Politics destroys people. We consistently rank politicians as Britain's least trusted professionals, viewing them as self-serving careerists detached from reality. Yet beneath this contempt lies a darker truth. Most aren't villains, but decent people trapped in a system designed to break them. Westminster operates like a meat grinder, churning out unrepresentative lawmakers, crushing families, and producing disastrous policies. The machine itself is broken, and it's breaking everyone inside it.
Westminster's corridors reveal a troubling demographic reality. 29% of MPs attended private schools versus 7% of Britons. One-tenth of these privately educated MPs graduated from Eton alone, which has produced 19 prime ministers. This isn't just elitism. It's a self-perpetuating aristocracy in democratic clothing. The gaps extend beyond education. Women comprise only 32% of MPs, despite being over half the population. Ethnic minorities remain underrepresented at 7.8% versus 14% nationally. Most striking, while 18% of Britons have disabilities, less than 1% of MPs do. The 2015 Parliament contained more career politicians, 107, than former teachers, nurses, and social workers combined. This homogeneity creates dangerous blind spots. How can MPs craft disability policy without navigating accessible buildings or understand poverty without missing meals? Neuroscientist Ian Robertson explains how power changes brain chemistry, creating a politico-erotic vicious circle where testosterone and dopamine form an irresistible feedback loop, explaining why politicians cling to office even when it destroys them. Becoming an MP resembles those pointless feats of strength in World's Strongest Man competitions. Candidates exhaust themselves physically, financially, and emotionally for years, only to have voters ignore their efforts and vote based on party leaders and national policies. It's the most expensive and time-consuming job interview on earth, with candidates working for free while spending tens of thousands of their own money with no guaranteed outcome. The average personal cost of standing in 2015 was $11,118, ranging from a $250 profit to a $550,000 loss. Conservative winners in marginal seats averaged $121,467 in personal costs. These costs disappear into lost income, petrol bills, donations at local events, and mortgage payments while campaigning full-time. Vicky Slade sold her wedding catering business, believing she'd win. She didn't. The personal costs extend beyond money. Kate Gottfried faced horrific treatment from her local Labour Party after refusing to back a benefits-cheating counselor. Hate mail with her face on page 3 of The Sun, indecent images, threats of rat poison, and midnight phone calls from party members she recognized. Online abuse affects candidates' families, with children reading terrible things about their parents. Many lose partners during campaigns. The system filters for either the wealthy or the obsessed, systematically excluding ordinary people. New MPs face immediate chaos navigating Westminster's Gothic labyrinth. The whips weaponize office assignments, party grandees claim riverside views, while newcomers share makeshift desks in converted classrooms. Beyond managing their $84,000 salary and Byzantine expenses, there's no job description or training. Parties invest heavily in winning elections, but provide little guidance on governing. MPs work 70 to 80-hour weeks trapped in busy work, attending receptions, making token debate appearances, delivering short speeches that boost monitoring statistics, while achieving nothing substantive. They must rapidly master Parliament's arcane procedures. Maiden speeches follow strict conventions. MPs cannot use colleagues' names. Clapping is forbidden, though SNP MPs deliberately violated this, while animal-like noises are acceptable. Terms like liar, hypocrite, or drunk are prohibited, with the speaker empowered to eject violators. Simply participating requires mastering an entirely foreign language and culture. Parliament resembles a complex ecosystem that appears orderly in diagrams but functions messily in reality. Despite spending 4 days weekly at Westminster creating laws, cross-party MPs describe parliamentary scrutiny as shocking and disappointing. Bill committees are theatrical charades where government MPs vote as instructed, regardless of expertise. Opposition amendments are systematically rejected, and MPs write Christmas cards during proceedings. One Tory MP called them an 18-day charade where everything you achieve comes from work outside the committee room. Secondary legislation allows ministers to push through policies with minimal scrutiny, 90 minutes of debates or none at all, no amendments allowed. While designed for technical details, ministers increasingly use this for significant policy changes. Most MPs aspire to join the executive, where they receive better media attention, staffing, pay, and post-politics prospects, distracting from scrutiny duties and allowing flawed legislation to pass unchallenged. Parliamentary life devastates relationships. 12% of MPs elected between 2010 to 2015 divorced while serving. MPs must choose between basing their family in the constituency or London, with either choice inviting criticism. One MP, whose marriage collapsed, recalled being warned his spouse must be 100% supportive. He thought she was 90%, but reality proved closer to 50%, quickly dropping to 30%. Westminster's drinking culture remains a persistent hazard. Alcohol laps around Westminster every day from lunchtime until the close of play. Liberal Democrat leader Charles Kennedy died at 55 from alcoholism after it cost him his leadership. Labour's Fiona Jones died of liver failure at 49, drinking whiskey in Parliament because nobody cared if she drank. Mental illness is so prevalent, Parliament now has dedicated psychiatric staff. As Charles Walker explains, if you are predisposed to having a weakness or a condition, Parliament will expose it. Losing an MP position combines public humiliation with sudden isolation. Ben Howlett went from constant colleagues to finding himself literally broken and alone. Long-serving members received $17,000 in loss of office payments in 2017, newer MPs just $3,000. Yet many former MPs report losing their seat ultimately saved their marriages and restored family relationships. We demand the impossible from politicians: constant constituency presence while attending Parliament, maintaining two homes, making crucial decisions on modest salaries. We punish scandals, abuse them online, then wonder why capable people avoid politics. The fixes are essential, not revolutionary. Shrink the executive cap ministers and parliamentary private secretaries at 15% of commons, ending patronage that transforms scrutineers into cheerleaders. Strengthen bill committees by linking them with select committees, bringing expertise to legislative scrutiny. Consider public payback panels, where affected citizens question committee members about vote consequences. Culture must shift so MPs aspire to serious legislation, not just ministerial posts. Select committees should become powerhouses with higher status, better pay, and real influence, making membership as desirable as executive positions. Diversify Parliament through outreach beyond party politics. Address financial barriers. Parties should provide candidate salaries, giving the best people, not just the best connected, a chance. These incremental changes lack revolutionary glamour, but beat constitutional upheaval. Any system involves flawed humans. Better to revive our existing framework than fantasize about perfect alternatives. Democracy isn't just about who we elect. It's whether the system lets them serve effectively. Right now, it doesn't. The question isn't whether politicians are good enough for us. It's whether we've built a system good enough for anyone.